As we watch world events unfold and fulfill Scripture, it's hard to believe anyone could doubt God and His Word are real. And yet there are so many who either question or completely refuse to believe it. The God Who Speaks is a 90-minute documentary that hits the doubt head-on with evidence that proves God is real and His Word is the ultimate authority. Watch it anytime and invite others to watch with you. Just visit stream.afa.net. That's stream.afa.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. It's Tuesday, December the 23rd, 2025, and again, we appreciate you joining us today. I'm Tim with Fred Jackson. Good morning, Brother Fred.
Good morning to you, Tim.
Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
And Ray Pritchard. Ray Pritchard's joining us, used to join us from Kansas City, Kansas. Now he's joining us from sunny Florida. How you doing, Ray?
Hey, I'm doing great, Tim. It's 75, 76 degrees down here.
Yeah.
All is well.
we're going to quit asking you about January. Although I will say right now, you know, I don't know how much of the country's experiencing this, but we're 70 today.
Yeah.
In Tupelo.
Yes. And we're going to enjoy the next 3 or 4 days at that temp.
Yeah, and then it goes.
Then it all falls apart.
Yeah, okay.
So no white Christmas for Tupelo this year?
No. I only remember one in my lifetime. That was like 10 years ago, something like that.
That was a good snowfall too.
Yeah, yeah, whopping inch or two.
No, it was like it was legit snow.
Yeah, that's legit snow for us though, isn't it?
Like the quality of it and we got a lot where I lived.
Yeah, well, I just know that if we hit 3 inches, we get to call out the National Guard.
Yeah.
Oh, me. Okay, well, we hope you have nice weather wherever you live. And I know that, you know, you got to go through the winter to appreciate the summer is what they say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who said that, but how wrong they were. all right, so a lot to talk about today on the program. Ray is with us, Fred and Chris. We don't have any guests today, so it's just going to be us four. And then we got Steve Paisley Jordahl will come over and talk to us coming up in about an hour. I read a very impressive email. Mm-hmm. It was a press release from the governor of the state of Arkansas.
Yes.
And read it last night, and Ray sent it to us. You got it.
Yeah, and someone from Arkansas, a member of our family lives in Little Rock, said, hey, you need to read this. And
yeah.
I got to say, I already loved Sarah Huckabee Sanders. Already did, Tim. But I loved her 10 times more when I read the letter she wrote back to, the Freedom From Religion Foundation?
Yeah, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, let me set this up for folks so they understand the context here. There is you remember the ACLU? They used to be very prominent. They're not as prominent as they once were. But they were always attacking Christians, and they were always, you know, claiming that we were trying to violate separation of church and state, and so forth and so on. Well, there's another organization called the Freedom From Religion. Isn't that
Foundation.
What they're called?
Freedom
From Religion Foundation. They're a relatively small outfit, but I think they're out of Wisconsin. Is that true?
They are.
Okay.
Yep.
But they're separation church and state left wingers, and they're always looking to try to, any kind of expression, especially of Christianity, but in the public square, if they can, they try to squelch.
Yeah.
I remember they were the ones who went after high schools for having prayer before football games. You remember this when this was on the news 15, 20 years ago? All right, so they're called the Freedom From Religion Foundation. They are bah humbuggers, okay, at Christmas time. They're bah humbuggers. And so Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the governor of Arkansas, got a letter from this organization the other day, and they were upset with her for all right, Chris, you take over the story now.
Yes. So they were upset with her. They took issue with her for closing state offices to celebrate Christmas, and they sent a letter demanding that Sarah Sanders rescind the proclamation. Sarah Sanders responded saying, "Christmas isn't just a holiday. It's the celebration of Jesus Christ's birth. Meaning matters. We won't pretend otherwise." And she went on to write them a letter back, sharing her two thoughts. And matter of fact,
read some of it.
Okay. "Earlier this week, I issued a proclamation closing state offices on Friday, December 26th to celebrate Christmas and offer state employees more time with their families. I am in receipt of a letter from your organization calling on me to rescind that proclamation because it, quote, gives a detailed theological narrative, presenting one Christian narrative, including the divinity of Jesus Christ, his crucifixion for the sins of mankind, his resurrection, and his anticipated return in glory. Please know that I will do no such thing."
Okay, the quotes, it's hard to understand in a letter like that exactly, but what she's saying, they're saying, okay, she signed a proclamation celebrating Christmas and letting state employees off
for the Friday, the day after.
Friday, the day after Christmas, December the 26th. They got mad. It's Freedom from Religion Foundation, Ray. They pitched a little hissy fit, and they wrote her and said, "You got to stop this. You're violating church and state," and so forth, so on. Mm-hmm. And she wrote them back and said, "I'm not stopping it." And furthermore, she went on to say she wished them a Merry Christmas, mm-hmm. and that she anyway, she's not backing down on this one iota, Ray.
You know, for too long, Christians, including Christians in places mm-hmm. of power and authority, like the governorship, have backed down under pressure from groups like Freedom from Religion.
Right.
She basically said, in two words, she said, "Pound sand, boys."
Words, but go ahead.
That's right. Pound sand. And then I added boys. Yeah, essentially, she did what Christians ought to do. She reaffirmed her faith. She said what she believed and why she believed it. And she said, "Sorry, but we're not going to change right. anything." God bless her for taking that kind of stand.
Okay. So, yeah, congratulations. And we are proud of Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She's all our governor today. She's governor of Arkansas. Where can people read this letter?
Yes, I posted it just now on our Today's Issues Facebook page. So go to the Today's Issues Facebook page.
Okay. And it is making national news.
It is.
So
good.
Anyway.
But you know, here's how God works. He took the testimony that Sarah Huckabee Sanders put out there, and people now are talking about it, thanks to the Freedom from Religion Foundation. And now it's gone public. And more people are going to read the real reason for Christmas.
Yes.
Well, I know even the atheists who work for the state of Arkansas, and there are five of them, appreciate having off on Friday.
Exactly.
Sure. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Right.
That's a good one. That's a good one. I will tell you this.
It gives them a 4-day holiday. Yeah. Go ahead.
For people that have listened to AFN or follow us online through our print service, we have done an FFRF story pretty much once every other week.
That's Freedom from Religion Foundation.
The Freedom from Religion Foundation. They always send these little hissy fit letters, and groups like First Liberty Institute will tell you, much like Ray said, go pound sand. There's nothing you can complain about here.
Well, I just remember I don't know if they still do or not, but they went on this search and destroy mission for high schools all across the country 10 years ago. And what would happen, they would find out whether or not a high school had a prayer before a football game.
Yeah.
And if they did, they brought them a letter, and they said, "We're going to sue you if you do this anymore." Well, a lot of the schools had administrators that got all worried if they got a letter like this, and they had maybe a lawyer, and they said, "Hey, you got to cut it out. It's a violation of separation of church and state." And so they stopped doing it. But a secret is, Fred, a lot of them have gone back.
Oh, yeah.
Don't tell the Freedom from Religion Foundation, but a lot of schools have gone back to having the traditional prayer before the high school football games on Friday night.
I graduated high school in this century,
No, yeah, you did.
I did. Yeah. I did. And we had the we said the Lord's Prayer in the band hall before we went out there on Friday nights. And I went to a public school.
Is that because y'all didn't want to blow it, or is that because you really meant it?
I'm just saying we did have a prayer before we went out there.
Lord help us, don't embarrass our families with our sound.
We hit the snare drum just right, Lord.
Help us not to lose too badly.
Well, you know,
that's right.
Well, I don't think that was the prayer ever.
Prayer granted.
I think. Hey, wait, listen. Most public prayers are just acknowledgments of God.
Yes, okay? That's right. Yes.
And that's been our tradition in America since our founding. We have publicly acknowledged God Almighty, and oftentimes specifically the Christian Jesus Christ. So anyway, good for Sarah Huckabee Sanders. All right, Ray, what about this? How's this sound? Vance Huckabee, Sanders ticket.
Oh, come on now. I mean, the evangelicals I mean, if we voted 80%, we'd vote 90% for that ticket.
Yeah.
I think that's a winner.
Well, that's a good idea.
J.D., remember what you heard here first, okay?
Yeah.
I don't know if that'll happen or not. I don't even know if Sarah Huckabee Sanders would be interested. I don't know what the relationship is between J.D. Vance, the current VP, and...
How old is she?
You don't ask a woman that, right?
I'll look it up.
I bet
you
Google
can look
knows.
It up on the internet.
I don't want to ask her that. I just want to find out.
I'm gonna guess she's 50, 49.
We're the same age.
What?
43.
40. Okay.
JD Vance, by the way, is 40, okay. 41, somewhere around.
That 43. Would make her older than JD, right? Yeah, okay.
Not
that
there's anything wrong with that.
Okay,
that,
first
no,
of all,
not that there is.
First of all, I retract my 49 or 50 statement. I don't know where that came
just
from.
Just a joke, Sarah.
Yes, I did not mean to suggest she appears to be that age. I was just guessing. She's, off the top
she
of my
she
head.
Is a strong leader, right? She predicts confidence.
Yeah. She's the first time?
She's in her
first
term.
Yeah. Okay. Of course, her daddy's Mike Huckabee. Yeah.
Chip off
governor.
The old block, as they say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. She's 43. J.D. Vance, he's 43, right?
He's not 44. Quite
he's not funny. He's, not
he's actually
old.
A little bit younger than
is
me.
He?
He's 41. This is the first time in my lifetime that somebody in the executive branch, like that high in the executive branch, is younger than me.
Okay. Is he the youngest vice president ever?
I don't think so.
Well, you know, probably back in the 1800s, you know, where people didn't live very long.
Right.
Okay.
You're probably going to have some guys in their 30s.
Now, according to the internet, the youngest vice president in U.S. history is a guy named John Cable Breckinridge.
Yes.
Who took office back in 1857 at the age of 36. But, by the way, he served under President James Buchanan. But here's where you don't always believe what you see on the internet, because in this Google search, under John Cable Breckinridge is a picture of Richard M. Nixon. So.
I was going to say, boy, he looks a lot like Richard Nixon.
They had color photos in 1857.
That's a little bit of a mistake, I guess.
So Breckinridge was whose VP?
James Buchanan.
And he was 30 what?
36.
He's just a kid.
He was barely old enough to be president, if it came to him.
When was that, in the 1800s?
1857.
All right. So there you go. A modern day, I would say, I'm going to say Dan Quayle was probably in his early 40s. I'm just guessing.
Let me see. Nixon was fairly young when he was VP back in the 50s.
Let's see. Who was he VP for, Fred?
Eisenhower. Oh, I'm sorry.
Eisenhower?
Winner.
Richard Nixon, was he VP? Who's he VP for?
Oh, that's right. Dwight Eisenhower.
Dwight Eisenhower.
Stick with me. I'll teach you something, Tim.
Well, I knew he was the governor of California, Richard Nixon, but I had forgotten he was Eisenhower's VP. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Speaking of who the next presidential candidates will be, on the Republican side, there was a poll taken at Turning Point USA's National Convention. What do they call that?
The straw poll?
AmFest.
AmeriFest.
Yeah, AmeriFest. That's what they call it. It's Charlie Kirk's organization. And Erica Kirk is hosting, obviously, because Charlie was killed this year. So she's hosting this. in Phoenix. There's what, 4,000 people, something like that?
No, 30,000 people came out for this.
Yeah, it was a record.
Yeah, for this event last weekend.
Are you guys sure about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what was reported.
30,000 people. Where are they hosting this? In the Coliseum?
It was at the, I think it's in the event, the same arena where the Phoenix Suns play.
Okay, well, anyway, thousands of people there, and a straw poll was taken among, and these are conservatives. These are mostly Christians, probably people like us.
And a lot of young people.
Yeah. And so they took a poll, a straw poll, as you say, Chris, to decide to among those attendees to see who they favored to be the Republican nominee for president in 3 years, 2 years, whenever all that starts. And what were the findings?
J.D. Vance won by a lot. Vice President J.D. Vance won by a lot. Matter of fact, if you were to combine the two people closest to him, those being Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, both of them together still wouldn't come close to Vance.
Right.
Vance led the pack with, by far, he had 84.2% of the vote. Rubio came in second with 4.8%, and DeSantis scored 2.9%.
Okay, so J.D. Vance, Fred, far and away the choice among, of course, you would think that he's the vice president, right?
Yeah, he has a high profile.
Right.
He spoke at the event. He was the big speaker of the event.
Yeah.
He is liked by the young people. Yesterday on this program, we played a little montage of some of the young people that were attending there. They believe that he is a Donald Trump next generation, and they like what Donald Trump is doing, his policies, and they see him as carrying on that agenda.
Yeah. By the way, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Fred, Chris, and Ray. Ray, what do you think about J.D. Vance appears to be, you know, smart enough.
You know, he's got the youth factor on his side.
Yeah, he
Young
does.
People are just attracted to him. Number two, he's very well spoken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we've talked about his life story.
Yeah.
And what's the name of the book?
Hillbilly Elegy. I've got it on my desk. I hadn't read it yet. I'm going to read it sometime.
I have read it. It is a tremendous story.
Okay.
So from a very difficult beginning, you know, rising up through that, through the Marines, to the Senate, to becoming vice president. It's a true American story. Uh-huh. And the other thing, I watched him when he, you know, he and Erica and the others, they were at that TPUSA event at Ole Miss back, you know, a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was bold.
Yeah.
He was clear.
Yeah.
He took questions from the audience, which not many candidates would dare to do. He's really comfortable in his own skin.
Yeah.
A very interesting family background. So I see his age is an issue, okay? And that will be to some degree. They'll throw that up at him. But I think he's a very attractive candidate. And you know what, Tim? I don't see anybody on the Republican side today that could beat him.
I don't either. In fact, I'm just looking ahead. He might go unchallenged. I know that sounds crazy because usually there's 7, 8, 9 challengers on Democrat or the Republican side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could be wrong about that. We'll wait and see. I don't think Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, he said publicly that if J.D. Vance runs, he won't run against him in the Republican primary. They're pretty close friends. Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, he's not going to overtake Vance, okay? So I don't think he'll run. He knows that.
Uh-huh.
You know, he tried to go against Trump last time, and that didn't work out. So I think Governor DeSantis, I think he has a future. Governor DeSantis is a conservative rock star,
uh-huh.
Okay? He's done as much in Florida as you can possibly do to advance limited government and conservative causes.
Uh-huh.
He's a stalwart, but he'll probably end up in J.D. Vance's administration on a high level, like a cabinet position.
Yep.
You know, Secretary of War, what they call it now, or something of that nature. We're just speculating here. There was some mention of Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, maybe throwing his hat in the ring. I don't think he could beat Vance. I think that would be a mistake. I love Ted Cruz, but I don't think he could beat Vance. And you know what? The Republicans could save a lot of time, energy, and money if they just rallied behind Vance and didn't make him go through a primary season that wasted a lot of money and time and energy. Yeah. That's my thought.
The media would feed off that. Go
in the way of contrast, I was just looking at a poll this morning on the Democrat side.
Yeah.
And right now, Governor Newsom of California is, again, way out in front of the nearest competition, Kamala Harris, AOC.
They're going to have to come up with somebody better.
Yeah. But he's leading the pack right now of what they think.
Newsom?
Newsom is. Mm-hmm. Now, can you imagine the contrast? It's going to be so clear for the American people. Gavin Newsom or J.D. Vance?
All right, let me again speculate, look into my crystal ball.
Okay.
I don't think we're Christians supposed to do that, are we, Ray?
No.
Well, anyway.
Read the tea leaves all the time.
That's metaphorically.
I can look into a metaphoric crystal ball,
right.
Can I?
That's right.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
So I'm looking, I'm seeing, here are your three people that I think right now could win. Would provide the best shot for Democrats. The governor of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
What is his name?
Josh Shapiro.
Josh Shapiro.
Mm-hmm.
He would be very formidable.
Yep.
And then you've got the governor of Maryland. What's his name? I know these people, but I can't. And I know their faces, but I can't necessarily remember their name.
Governor of Maryland is Wes Moore.
Okay. Wes Moore, the governor of Maryland. And then you've got Governor of Michigan. I don't think she's dead in the water.
Gretchen Whitmer.
I could see her actually having a pretty successful primary.
Yeah. So those three governors, I think, would be the best chance for the Democrats.
We might very well have a President Kamala Harris today had she picked Josh Shapiro to be her running mate.
I agree.
And not
she probably would have won Pennsylvania. That'd have been gone wrong.
Which she needed to. Speaking of... Governor Shapiro. I'm not making this up.
Is it Shapiro, or are you putting the Southern
Shapiro
spin on that?
Shapiro.
Okay, Shapiro.
All right. He's actually one of the people that Axios thinks may try to run in 2028, to the point that he is supposedly changing his appearance to try to appeal to a broader base of voters. I have posted this story on our page.
Well, what did he do?
All right. According to Axios, Governor Shapiro's suits are more tailored now and modern, but not too flashy, because that was one of the reasons why Harris did not pick him. She was afraid he would overshadow her.
Because of his suits?
Yes. Meanwhile,
did he pick him because of his suits?
She's so deep.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
she's so deep.
Illinois Governor Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has lost weight, fueling speculation that he's going to run in 2028. And I'm not making this up, Tim. Pete Buttigieg, who did run for president a couple of elections ago, grew a beard to try to appeal to a broader base of people.
Would you vote for him? You got a beard?
No, I would not vote for him.
Okay. Just because he has a beard doesn't mean he gets the beard vote.
That's right.
Amen.
Okay. I would say, listen, I think it's going to be a Donnybrook in the Democrats on the Democrat side.
Yeah.
I think all those names you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And Alexandria
Ocasio-Cortez.
I think she's going to probably throw her hat in the ring.
Don't rule out Ma'am Donnie. The people that think he...
What's
Raise
his name?
The sun.
That's his first name.
Zohran Mamdani. I mean, he hasn't even served yet. People are going to give him another office.
Yeah. Of course, Bernie Sanders, he'll be 106, but I think he might run again.
I have a message. I have a plan.
I'm still alive.
That's the plan.
Vote
I'm
for
still
me.
Alive.
I'm still alive.
Oligarch.
All right. We're going to take a break right here. For a couple minutes, and we will be back with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Let me ask you a question. Did you ever want to quit? Did you ever want to hang them up and call it a game? If you haven't, then you aren't normal. Every normal person has periods when he's ready to throw in the towel. Several years ago, I charted a course for my life. I chose what I believed to be the highest and truest way of living. I gave myself to it, and I have pursued it. But there have been times when I have wanted to quit, to call it a game and hang up the togs. Quitting is tempting because it's easier. You know, when you get knocked down time and again, it's hard to get up and go another time. When it seems as though you're behind and can never catch up, it's awful hard to keep trying. Life is tremendously demanding if a person pledges himself to the best he knows. It becomes so difficult sometimes that the temptation to give up is very strong. The benefits of giving up seem appealing and attractive. I can understand why some people have given up. They grew tired of following their highest dream, and then they started demanding less and less of themselves. Finally, the dream was no more. A person needs a solid foundation if he attempts to follow the highest and best he knows, because when the storms of doubt and despair blast against our structure, it will crumble like dust if there isn't something solid underneath. As I write this, I'm tempted to give up, to quit on the direction I chose some years back. All the advantages of giving up are looming out before me like water to a person dying of thirst. How strong the desire to quit. But I will not quit. I can't. Because I know that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished by quitting. I will never accomplish all I would like to, but I will accomplish nothing if I give up. And back there when I made my decision, I wasn't promised peaches and cream. The one I follow was crucified. Why do I think following him should be easy? No, I made my vow to be faithful. And that's all he desires of me. Not to be successful, not to be popular. One thing he desires of me, to be faithful. And you know, I can do that. I can be faithful. I can hang in there and give the best I have. I will be a better person by doing that, and stronger. And by doing so, I can help another who is struggling to stay above water. Quit? Sure, I want to quit. How easy life would be if I just call it a game and run away. But I will not do that, no matter how great the temptation. He is depending on me to be faithful. And that's the one thing I can and will do. I will not disappoint him. I will be faithful. So, give me a drink of the living water. I'm ready to get back into the game of life.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
We give thanks to God always for all of you, constantly mentioning you in our prayers, remembering before our God and Father your work of faith and labor of love and steadfastness of hope in our Lord Jesus Christ. 1 Thessalonians 1:3.
American Family Radio.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR. I'm Tim with Fred and Chris and Ray. We hope you're getting ready for a big Christmas, which is 2 days from now. By the way, we are going to start Christmas. Brent, if you don't mind, pull the microphone up. Brent Creeley, our producer, a man of high intelligence and great character, but rarely speaks here on the program. What do we got coming up on AFR?
Starting Wednesday at 12 a.m., we will have Christmas music, wall-to-wall Christmas music, until Saturday morning at 12 a.m.
So midnight.
Midnight, yes, sir.
So midnight tomorrow, Christmas Eve.
True, yes, sir.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Midnight tomorrow through midnight Saturday.
Yes.
So 3 days.
Yes, that's correct.
So 3 days. So when you tune in the radio to listen to American Family Radio, you're going to hear Christmas music.
That's true. Yes, sir.
Okay. For 3 days, because we're going to pause ourselves. Our studios and offices are closed. Our staff is with their families, like you're with yours. So there's nobody here. There's nobody here to do any radio. So we'll be playing music for 3 days. So enjoy that. And who doesn't like Christmas music, right?
That's right.
Fred?
That's right. It's a special time of the year, and it really kind of sets it, the environment that we can enjoy.
Yeah.
And it's, as you were saying yesterday, Tim, it is really solid, good Christmas music.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this, Ray. You guys got a big family. Y'all spread out all over the country. I guess y'all try to get together maybe once a year. You can't probably always get together at Christmas, can you?
It has been a while since we've been able to get everybody together at Christmas, because we've got a son who pastors in Missoula, Montana, and they always want the pastor around at Christmas time, right?
That's true.
And then we've got another branch of the family. Our youngest son is up in Chicago, and our oldest son is there in the Kansas City area. We sort of look at it now as if we can get two out of the three branches together.
That's a pretty good batting average, huh?
That's right. That's a pretty good average for us. Yeah.
Hey Ray, I'm going to make a prediction. Now that you and your wife are living in Florida, the urge to get together with during the winter months is just going to.
They're
going to
become. Right. It's right. Freezing cold up in Missoula. Son, if you're listening up there in Missoula, come on down to Florida. It's sunny and warm down here.
They're measuring snow in Missoula right now in feet, not inches.
You know, we got one of our staff here I talked to. He's flying up there
to Montana.
That's what I said.
Best of luck.
Why?
Well, they've got, I don't know if it's, I think there's a, they want to enjoy the, I know
well,
you're
there
laughing.
There you go.
They want to enjoy 3 feet of snow, Fred. Who doesn't?
That's right. Who doesn't, right?
Anyway, I don't know. They got, there's a lodge or something they're going to, and maybe do a little snow skiing or something. I don't know. I'll tell you one thing. Parts of Montana and Idaho and in that area there, Pacific, about to get bombarded.
Yeah,
Washington State, it's happening now.
Wyoming,
right?
Yes, it has been happening, and that south of that is rain.
That atmospheric river is moving from west to east. Yeah,
mm-mm-mm.
Yeah. If we had a foot of snow here, and of course you wouldn't have it far. But if you had it here where
it'd
we live,
end of the world.
Which we do. We will get a snow probably in January. Get one, maybe two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 2, 4, 6, maybe 6 inches. You get a foot, they'd be reading about us in history books.
Yes,
like 100 years from now, we have.
There once was a place called Tupelo.
Yes.
Be like Vesuvius.
And they were here. We have recovered real people lived there. But right. There came a snowstorm of 10 inches, and they disappeared. All right. So you're listening to Today's Issues. Hey, there's also a good news story out of Oklahoma, right?
Yes. Yeah, this is a story that we've been tracking for a while on AFN.net. It involves a college student in Oklahoma that got a zero grade because she was asked to share her opinion on an essay that involved gender and sexuality. She got a zero for that, and the teaching assistant that was behind this whole project is now gone as a result of the uproar that started over this. We've done these stories here.
Well, what does she do wrong, supposedly? This is a student at the University of Oklahoma in Norman, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's going to class. The professor asked her to write something about what? What was the subject matter?
It was an essay about, like, gender and sexuality.
Okay, so she wrote an essay on gender and sexuality, and she basically gave him the... Read the traditional or Christian worldview.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she referenced the Bible.
Yeah, so he gave her an F, right?
Yep.
Or a zero.
Zero.
Professor gave her a zero.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Because she didn't give him the left-wing version of what he wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she spoke out about it. This student did, huh?
Yeah.
Yep.
Fred, is that what it tells us?
Yeah, her name is Samantha Fulnecki. And she went public with this, happened, And the university, to its credit, reacted very quickly. I think they suspended him first, Chris, and now they have fired him. So it's freedom of
speech. Imagine if she wouldn't have stood up, though, and you know, voiced a complaint.
Yes.
This would have gone tolerated.
Yeah. This is, you know, we're seeing stories like this, and it is encouraging.
Yeah.
We see young people.
Yeah.
Young people being willing to take a stand. You can, you know, factor in the Charlie Kirk effect on young people out there. Go out there, speak up. Don't be ashamed. You're a Christian. Speak out, because God can use your testimony. It's exactly what Samantha did. Congratulations, Samantha, for what you did, and continue to use your testimony.
Yeah.
Where do we have this story, Chris?
I posted it on our Today's Issues Facebook page, and we'll follow it up with AFN.net. I found the title of the project, and it again involves gender issues. The title of the project was Relations Among Gender Typicality, Peer Relations, and Mental Health During Early Adolescence.
Well, that ought to be banned just because of too many words.
That's right.
Okay. So that was the paper that the students were supposed to write on.
Yes.
This guy. The student's name is Samantha Fulnecky, Fulnecky, junior at the University of Oklahoma in Norman. And good for her. She spoke up, and because this was unfair, what was done to her, and that she basically was persecuted because of her Christian beliefs.
Yeah.
Yep.
And at least the University of Oklahoma did the right thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you can't do that to this, is it a professor or assistant professor?
It's a teaching assistant is how it's been used.
And they fired him.
Phrased.
She went to the book of Genesis in her paper, in which God created men and women equally, but with separate purposes. Here's what she wrote, part of what she wrote. Gender roles and tendencies should not be considered stereotypes, Fulnecky wrote in her essay. Women naturally want to do womanly things because God created us with those womanly desires in our hearts. The same goes for men. God created men in the image of his courage and strength, and he created women in the image of his beauty. He intentionally created women differently than men, and we should live our lives with that in mind. She's a junior. She's, what, 21 years old?
So he gave her a zero for that, huh?
Gave her a zero for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What you just said, which is the way the world has believed since time began.
Yes, God's design.
This modern day, this modern day movement of gender confusion is just, it's new.
Yeah.
And nobody in the world, any world religions, accepted this idea that men and women aren't different.
Right.
Even back 20 or 30 years ago, if you had said, well, men can become women and women can become men, you'd be mocked even by the liberals back then. They would say, you're a flat earther. You don't believe in biological science.
You want to see something funny, and this will probably happen with the Democrats in the next presidential race. Ask a Democrat, can a man have a baby?
Yes.
Mm. Right? You just ask a Democrat in a race, can a man, that's all you got to ask them, can a man have a baby? And then put the microphone.
And watch them stutter.
Watch them stutter.
Or say nothing.
Sure, yeah.
Remember Justice Jackson?
Mm-hmm. Tanya
Brown
Jackson.
When she was asked that question.
Supreme Court Justice,
She just, she stood there and she smiled.
Well, she said she wasn't a, what did she say?
A biologist.
She said, I don't know, I'm not a biologist.
That's what you don't have to be a biologist to know the answer to that question.
I know, she knew the answer to that. She didn't want to answer.
Of course she did.
But that was her answer is, when they said, can a man have a baby? She said, I think that was the question. What? Mm-hmm. She said, I don't know. I'm not a biologist.
Yes. Yep.
That's how far the left-wing mind will go to try to deny reality.
Mm-hmm. And they are the same ones that say we should believe science or trust science when it backs their narrative.
I know. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues. So good news out of Arkansas with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. What she said, we put that, the governor of Arkansas. And good news out of Oklahoma there. Where else can we go for good news? Chris, what else you got?
Well, I tell you what, let's do, this is a nice warm soundbite from Sarah Sanders' dad, Mike Huckabee, who, of course, is the current U.S. ambassador to Israel. He was on Washington Watch yesterday, and I'll share that podcast here in a second. But Ambassador Huckabee.
He's been on with us
Oh, yeah. Too. Yeah, he's been on with us. He's been on with Washington. Yeah.
He doesn't just like Tony Perkins. He also likes us.
He was on Washington Watch yesterday, and they spent about 20 minutes talking about all kinds of things, and it got to the point where Tony did ask Ambassador Huckabee. I always want to call him Governor Huckabee. But Ambassador Huckabee, what are you going to do at Christmas this year? Clip 8.
He's going to go to Bethlehem on Christmas Eve. We'll be there for the midnight Christmas service at Church of the Nativity. Enjoy Manger Square. It'll be a special time. And, you know, I hope around the world people will be praying that this will be a peaceful Christmas and that it will lead to a peaceful 2026.
I did not go to Bethlehem when I was in Israel back in August. Have you been there?
27 times, I think, yeah. Or something like that. I've been there a lot. Yeah. That's Arab, basically, controlled area, Palestinian Authority. So they have a different kind of police than they have like in Jerusalem. But, Bethlehem's only about what, Ray, 10 miles from Jerusalem?
Even less than that. Or 7 miles, right? Because you could walk on those roads, the dirt roads in Jesus' day, you could walk in 2 or 3 hours coming down from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. Bethlehem would be, you wouldn't exactly call it a suburb, would you? But it was on the outskirts of Jerusalem.
It's like 7 miles outside of town.
Well, yeah, from the edge of Jerusalem. You know, Jerusalem's, you know, that's a nice-sized town. I mean, you're talking about 500,000 people.
Sure.
That live in the greater Jerusalem area, but Bethlehem, yeah, I know we leave our hotel and go to Bethlehem, you know, it's probably 30-45 minutes drive down there.
Yeah, and you've got checkpoints you got to get through and stuff like that. So it's not as easy to get there today in many ways as it was 2,000 years ago. But people say when you go to Israel, how close are you to the spot where things actually happened. You know, if you go to the Church of the Nativity, which is one of the oldest churches in Christendom, it's what, 1800, 1900 years old. I mean, been built and rebuilt, and it's massive and it's old, ancient, and all of that. And there's that grotto, Tim, you know, where all the tour groups go down, and they say this is where Jesus was born. Well, I always say to our groups, look, this might be the exact spot. But if not, don't worry. We're in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
We're in the neighborhood where Jesus was born. Could have been right here. Couldn't have been very far away.
Absolutely. That is correct. You're listening to Today's Issues. What's the next story, Chris?
Well, in another soundbite here from Huckabee, he is among the people out there that's encouraging Christians and other people in general to speak up and say something about the rise in anti-Semitism, not only here in the U.S., but worldwide. Clip 9.
It's a disgusting thing when you see the anti-Semitic activities that somewhat are an outgrowth of the attitudes and the silence. My speech teacher in high school used to tell us, silence is agreement. And when people see this Jew hatred across the world and they don't say anything and they don't do anything, you end up creating the atmosphere in which something happens like what happened in Australia. And we as Christians need to say, we're not going to be silent. We will speak up.
I brought that up because we talked about anti-Semitism with Alex yesterday in issues involving Israel. There, according to the media, there is a divide now in the Republican Party over the issues of Israel, and some people are saying it's because of anti-Semitism creeping into the GOP.
Okay, I read what Tucker Carlson said about this, and on the surface, it seems to make sense, sounds logical, but I want you to read what he said. Do you guys have it? And then read what this is Tucker Carlson, and read what he said. Then I want to tell you where he's missing the mark. Go ahead.
Okay, this is from a Newsweek article, Tim, that you sent out last evening. This is what Carlson said. Is it America first to take money from a foreign lobby so you'll send taxpayer dollars to that country? Even the question kind of answers itself. Obviously, it isn't. That's not an attack on Israel. It's certainly not anti-Semitism, despite the efforts of many to claim that it is. It's just an obvious statement, Carlson said.
Okay, so if you take the approach that Tucker Carlson takes, and many in MAGA do, the Make America Great movement. I want to make America great too. So, I mean, I agree with most all of what President Trump stands for. I agree with him. And Tucker Carlson and I would probably share 90% of ideas on things. However, what he's saying right there, I don't think it applies to Israel, okay? Do we, the United States federal government, we give foreign aid all over the world and have forever. And people have argued, well, we shouldn't give foreign aid at all. Okay, I'm going to differ on that one. I think we should give foreign aid and there needs to be strings attached, all right? Now, some people would say, well, we don't have the money to give foreign aid anymore. Well, that's another discussion, okay? But I'm talking about the idea of the United States bribing people in the world to do what we want them to do. We've always done that. And that's just the way the world works, and it works to our benefit if we do it right. So to send money to Israel, that's what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. First of all, he's talking about Tucker Carlson is saying, okay, Israeli lobby, as it were, politically, and all foreign countries have lobbyists in Washington, D.C., all right, trying to influence our government officials and our elected politicians. Any government of any, stature at all is going to have foreign lobbies. So does the Israeli lobby in Washington influence politicians and have forever? Yes. Do they give them money? Yes. Not give them money in their pocket, but give them money to their campaigns. Okay. So that happens. That's always happened. So what Tucker Carlson is saying, because these Israeli lobbyists give money to politicians, they then go to the House or the Senate and they vote for money to go to Israel. You see what I'm saying here? Mm-hmm. And he's saying that's wrong. That's not America first. Okay, I would say we need to financially, Ray, you jump in here if you want to. We need to financially support Israel. And I think they do get more money than any other country in the world in terms of our financial foreign aid. Because they're our strongest ally in the region. They are the closest thing we have to Western-style democracy in the Middle East. There is no such thing. So it's good to have a good... And also, the Jewish people have been persecuted over the history, and we need to support them and help them have their own country. And it's a stable... Make it a stabilized region. We don't have to mistreat the Arabs. Or the Muslims, but I mean, we need to stand with Israel. Also, they protect the holy sites. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just going to say it. They protect the Christian holy sites and the Jewish holy sites. And by the way, there's a Muslim holy site that's over the Temple Mount right now. So there's no other place in the world like Israel when it comes to the religious history of the amount of peoples that look to that part of the world for their heritage, okay? So I disagree with Tucker Carlson. I agree what he's saying is true. I agree that is the way it works. He's right about that, but I don't agree that it's immoral or wrong. Listen, we pay Egypt. We give Egypt a lot of money. You know why we give Egypt a lot of money? You would say, well, what are we doing giving Egypt money? We give Egypt money so they keep the peace with Israel. And in the region, and they're our friend, so that when we go to call on them for a favor or to do something to, in the best interest of the United States, to keep the Suez Canal open, for example, we don't want Egypt to fall to the Muslim Brotherhood, which is basically like ISIS. You'd rather have a good, friendly relationship with people that are rational, as they control Egypt. So, do we have foreign aid all over the world that we use to buy people off?
Yes. Yes.
Yes, we do, and we always have, and that works out, Ray. It works out. Typically, it's supposed to work out to the benefit of the United States. Go ahead.
That's exactly right. Okay, you used Egypt. Take the example of Saudi Arabia. Look, culturally, they are very different. The culture, the worldview, the predominant Islamic religion over there. Very different from what we do here in the U.S. And we know there is not much, if any, real religious freedom in Saudi Arabia. But we buy oil from them. We sell them planes. Why? Because generally they're friendly to us. Generally, they have a much more open attitude toward Israel than the radical Muslims do. So
right.
Really, both Democrats and Republicans, this is not like a right-wing, left-wing issue. We've said it's in our interest to do business with Saudi Arabia. They help us keep peace in the Middle East, and they're not trying to bomb Tel Aviv. So nobody objects to that.
Yeah, short of seeing the religion of Islam go away,
right,
then that's the best approach to take, is to try to deal with those who are rational, reasonable Muslims for the sake of a national peace on earth and commerce. We need that Suez Canal open in Egypt, okay? The United States of America does. Canada does. Huh. The West does. We need the Straits of Hormuz, or what do you call that over right there? Anyway, that part of the world is critical to world commerce, and we don't need it all taken over by the radical Muslims.
And I think the political establishment in this country is still very much aware that in America, the people of the Bible, whether it's, you know, Baptist or Catholic or others, they believe in supporting Israel because they believe in supporting God's chosen people. So there is that very strong spiritual element there. I mean, Tim, you go to Israel almost every year. Ray, you've taken groups there too. There's a reason those groups want to go there. They believe in the Bible. They believe in the account of Scripture. And God's, the Jews have a special place in God's heart. Mm-hmm. So, and I always go back to Genesis 12. You know, God's promise to Abraham, I'll bless those that bless you, and I'll curse those that curse you. And I think the blessings that God has bestowed upon this country, a lot of it has to do, I believe, with how this country has supported Israel. And God forbid the day that we have a government that stops supporting Israel.
Okay, in 2023, the four countries that got the most money from us in terms of foreign aid were Ukraine, Israel, Jordan, and Egypt. And Jordan and Egypt would be those governments we work with to keep the peace in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Jordan has always been a friend of ours.
Yep.
Right.
Right, isn't that right?
That's right.
King Hussein.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway, so.
And Jordan is living peacefully side by side with Israel.
They are. Absolutely. So, and we've given a lot of money down through the decades to the Palestinians.
Yes, sir.
Yes, we did.
I mean, a lot of money. In fact, one time I was talking to a gentleman in Israel who was an Arab or Palestinian, and he was one of our tour guides. He was a Christian man, but he was an Arab. And he said, listen, he was talking about his own, the Palestinian people over there, PLO at the time, Yasser Arafat.
Uh-huh.
Remember after Yasser Arafat died? Now, he was the leader of the political, of the Palestinian people there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
What, did he die 15 years ago or so, something like that, Ray? Do you remember something like that?
Yeah.
Anyway, after he died, they found all those millions of dollars in Swiss bank accounts.
Yeah.
But anyway, this gentleman who was our tour guide at the time, he said to me, listen, had Yasser Arafat spent the money that he was given by countries all over the world to improve the living conditions of the Palestinian people, we would have had roads built, we'd have had hospitals and businesses and university. In other words, he was saying all the money that came in here to support the people, basically it went in the pockets of the politicians who Yasser Arafat was chief among them.
Yes.
And did not go to improve the living conditions of the very people that the money was given to support.
Yeah.
So that's the history of that. All right, Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
And Fred and I will return with, and Ray will be with us, and we will be back in a couple minutes with Steve Paisley Jordahl. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.